The talk this evening is on the eight worldly winds, eight worldly concerns, they're sometimes called, or the sutta is actually called, one of the translations, the failings of the world, which includes gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and disrepute, and praise and blame. Yeah, I think I'll just start reading reading a poem. This is One Art by Elizabeth Bishop. I think it's actually a villanelle. It's a it has a very impressive structure and rhyming thing to it, but it's not at all a rhymey poem. The art of losing isn't hard to master. So many things seem filled with the intent to be lost that their loss is no disaster. Lose something every day. Accept the fluster of lost keys, the hour badly spent. The art of losing isn't hard to master. Then practice losing farther, losing faster, places and names and where it was you meant to travel. None of these will bring disaster. I lost my mother's watch, and look, my last or next to last of three loved houses went. The art of losing isn't hard to master. I lost two cities, lovely ones, and vaster, some realms I owned, two rivers, a continent. I missed them, but it wasn't a disaster. Even losing you, the joking voice, a gesture I love, I shan't have lied. It's evident the art of losing's not too hard to master, though it may look like, write it! Like disaster. So as she goes through the poem, she starts with the very ordinary things that are annoying when we can't find our keys, or we wasted too much time fiddling around in Facebook or whatever it was. And then she goes on to places, names you can't remember, the places you meant to travel that you never will, and on to much grander things of losing three loved, not just one, but three loved houses, cities, realms, rivers, continents, and that none of that is a disaster. So, it's just a very Buddhist sense in this poem of the First Noble Truth, that this is just how it is. It's just as normal as can be. And it's not a disaster, but like this last bit when she's saying, suddenly you realize, oh, she's writing to a to a person who's gone, saying, oh, even losing you, the joking voice, the gesture I love, it's not a disaster, but it sure looks like disaster. So she's coping with a loss of someone, and it's part of her knows this is totally normal, but there's that pull, that feeling of like, something's wrong, the universe is off its rails. And that's how we are. That's how it feels. Like these totally normal things that happen to us feel like we just get this pull towards something is quite wrong. It in a more concise way than the worldly winds, the teaching about the second arrow, like that life is full of all these things that happen to us. We lose everything, or others will lose us. So the second arrow is what we do when we are faced with the pains of life, that we add all this extra stuff. And this isn't anything that the Buddha said or that I read anywhere. It just feels to me like the eight worldly winds, this list of these paired opposites, is kind of like a little checklist. So for like, what's the flavor of the second arrow that's trying to, my mind is trying to add this extra layer of suffering. Like, what category are we in? What flavor is this? While I was working, just reading more on this and thinking about it a lot, when all the storms were happening, I didn't have a big, I mean, I certainly had a reaction to all the news about what was happening to other people. I didn't have any big things happen. And the sound of the rain or whatever, that didn't, none of that got to me, except there were some moments when the wind was really blowing, the worldly wind was really blowing, and I just felt this like instant, like instinctive fear reaction happen to it. And I went, oh, what's that? Oh, okay, it has nothing to do with fame or disrepute, for praise or blame. It's got nothing to do with my reputation. No one is going to hold me responsible for the weather. Though actually, if a tree fell on the house, or the roof was leaking, probably my husband would feel some blame. He would feel like he didn't take care of things right because he's so darn good at watching over all those things, but I would not. So these things can be quite idiosyncratic. But I realized, oh, this is about loss, and this is I'm afraid of losing something, and I'm afraid of pain. I'm afraid of being in pain in a way I haven't been previously. So that's just one example of just kind of helping find what territory we're in. Like, as soon as I realized, oh, this is like fear of loss and pain, I could just sink in with a little more clarity into the feeling that was in my heart and my body, and take care of it, take care of the feeling, and not have it, pull me off into something that just isn't at all necessary. The I mean, there's probably other translations to this, but the translation I was working with of the sutta, like sort of like people are mostly probably familiar with that, but the word sutta or sutra, the like sort of the Buddhist scriptures, the words of the Buddha. This is the Lokavipati Sutta. And this one translates it as the failings of the world. This is Tinasara Bhikkhu. So just that alone, calling it the failings of the world is such, I really appreciate calling it that. Like that praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and ill repute, like four of those sound good. But they're still the failings of the world. So it's they're paired like that, and none of them is inherently like whatever we are enjoying is going to end. And it's a natural tug of the mind to want to hold on to it, it's extreme, which is that we it gets so sticky, something gets so sticky that we get addicted. Which can happen in all kinds of big and small ways. But it goes through a lot of, a lot of times the suttas will repeat a lot of things that, they draw it out very, very precisely. But I will just cut to the chase here to say the first part of it is all about like who, what, like, for a person who practices these trainings of the mind, what happens for that person, and what happens for the person who doesn't practice these trainings of the mind? And it's exactly the same. Everyone is subject to these worldly winds, whether you practice or you don't practice. So, let's see. So, what happens for the person who isn't trained? Just reading the quote here. He welcomes the arisen gain and rebels against the arisen loss. He welcomes the arisen status and rebels against the arisen disgrace. He welcomes the arisen praise and rebels against the arisen censure or blame. He welcomes the arisen pleasure and rebels against the arisen pain. As he is thus engaged in welcoming and rebelling, he is not released from sorrows, lamentation, pains, distresses, or despairs. He is not released, I tell you, from suffering and distress. So that holding on and pushing away of whatever happens, like there's every event that happens, potentially has that in it, that tug that we can get pulled into. Oh, that's great. I want that again. Hit me again, in a good way. I mean, or something unpleasant arises, and we just clench up around it, and it makes everything worse. So, yeah, I also think of it as the second foundation, like an expansion on the second foundation of mindfulness. In a way, too. Again, this is just me talking. This is, my thoughts on this, not anything I read, but just that everything has this t feeling tone of being pleasant or unpleasant, or we're spacing out and not registering it. So again, it's it's a way to kind of see which category, like you can see, oh, pleasant. Well, is it pleasant because it's gain? Is it pleasant because it's fame? Is it pleasant because, like that. And these things can also, the winds themselves are both, the external winds of everything that's happening to us in our lives day in and day out, but also the internal way that we carry all these things, that we are little generators of all kinds of things that aren't actually happening. We spend a lot of our day in our minds interacting with, relating to, reacting in our bodies to the things that our minds are generating, whether there's any reality to them or not. Sometimes they can be very in touch with reality and sometimes not. And then also the it just seemed to me as I worked with them more that the pleasure and pain, gain and loss can be on a personal level at a in a certain way, but I mean, of course, they can also be quite related to other people and beings and the planet and all those kinds of things. But praise and blame and fame and disrepute are more about external relationships. Though we can be the ones that are blaming ourselves for sure, praising ourselves. I was asking us in the meditation, just suggesting that just to notice if there were any kind of thoughts coming through that were self-critical about your meditation, or were like, oh, I got it now. Oh, that was a really good couple of breaths. All right, I'm with the breath now, and then 3 minutes later, you go, oh my God, I've been lost for, whatever, like that. So just that simple thing of just noticing whether we're adding all a bunch of stuff like that while we're meditating. I mean, it's challenging enough, right? It's challenging enough to pick a focus of meditation and develop the gatheredness and the steadiness to stay with it. That's job enough. So, yeah, just noticing when we're meditating that we, this praise and blame can come up a lot for us. Yeah, I've just been watching all kinds of things happen in the world while working on this talk and reading more about it. Just seeing so many things in the, through this light. Like the praise and blame. I don't know if people are on the call that aren't in the Bay Area, then you probably wouldn't know this, but there's a gallery owner downtown in DC that got photographed by the guy across the street hosing down an unhoused woman who was and I guess has been parked out in front of his place or on that block for some time. And it was just a horrific thing to witness. Not a good move by any measure. And the guy himself, I heard him interviewed like day one. Probably now it's all so legalistic, he would never talk to a media person, but he was so chagrined, he just was so chagrined. But man, do they want to take that one and run with it. And certainly, there's lots of things to look at about, why this person is in this place and doesn't have a home. And people, businesses on that block have tried to get help because it has been disruptive and not gotten help. And there's a lot of blame to go around if we want to do that. But I was really touched by hearing Amos Brown, Reverend Amos Brown, has been involved in city politics for as long as I've been here, and I've been here for like over 40 years. Just saying, based on the, he was saying very clearly my following of Jesus that I do not believe in punitive justice. I believe in restorative justice. And I don't think I've ever seen something so instantly like that, that this man who did this horrible thing is so prime for restorative justice. I mean, you could just tell he's like so ready to try to make good on it. But everybody wants to use him as, everybody is going to make political gains by blaming him. So, ugh, anyway, just watching how, just turning on the news anytime, you just see so much of this going on that's really what a waste of time, what a waste of all our energy for all the, the next person that, like, there's just this subtle thing going on all the time whenever, like, just driving around in the car and, oh, that person there, driving like that, whatever, just this constant thing of looking out at other people, like, and positioning ourselves without saying it to ourselves of I'm not that, so we're boosting ourselves. Like, just this thing goes on all the time. It's happening in all kinds of ways. And then just the media and it's like social media was not a thing, 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, it was hardly a thing. And what that's done to these features for us, especially the fame and disrepute and the praise and blame, is kind of stunning. Like, just the impact on the mental, like Facebook can potentially be, like a gossip column or like the worst of teenagers gossiping about each other. But what it's done to the mental health of teenagers, that anything you do can be posted, you can be shamed so widely. There's a whole other level that we're coping with that I don't think we like actually stop to just be tender with our hearts about how much more fear and whatever there is that we might suddenly be, be put out in the world as, like somebody may say something untrue about us or whatever. Like that could have been true at any point in our lives, but now it can be that, everybody in the world knows that. So anyway, that we've had a huge up in the just, turning up the flames on this stuff, and including just that you there's a satisfaction of having a certain fame of like photographing your lunch and everybody can see it on Facebook or whatever. There's a certain nothing wrong, with that, nothing, no harm in that, but except that you might, just that whole thing of, oh, do I have friends? Did I get likes? Do I have followers? Just that sort of thing about Facebook. It just has ramped things up even more for all of us. So just a lot of places to tune in and watch what happens inside of our hearts. So the most important way of working with these things is the just tuning into what the Buddha said and just listening to other teachers about this more. Just the practice of patience. Kanti is the Pali word. Like the pull can be so quick, it can feel like there's not even a moment to notice that we're doing it, that we're feeling susceptible to one of these worldly winds. Let me just pull out this. Yeah, I'm just going to read some quotes from Ajahn Suchito, talking about this. The mind heart habitually creates suffering and stress through reacting to, holding on to, or getting caught up with what life throws at us. So we train to hold the heart still in the presence of its suffering until it lets go of the way in which it creates that suffering. Just going to read that again. We train to hold the heart still in the presence of its suffering until it lets go of the way in which it creates that suffering. So that will carry the heart through the turbulence of existence so that it no longer shakes, sinks, or lashes out. So the Buddha actually speaks of or spoke of patience being the most of all the positive qualities that we might cultivate. Patience is the one that purifies the most, and that in fact it was quite important on the night of his awakening that he was all of those forces of Mara that came to him. You could look at any one of them, and it was, about it was about the worldly winds, trying to, pull him towards, sexual longing or, whatever the temptations were. Finally, with the one of like, who are you to do this? Who do you think you are to be enlightened? Which is, disrepute or putting somebody down or whatever, and that hearing them all and just seeing that, feeling this sting of these things, knowing, wow, this is tender, and holding it with patience is what the practice is all about. Let's see, there's. And for one piece, I was having computer dukkha before we got on with my printer. I wonder if this even got printed out here. Well, so I'm just going to try to do this from what I'm remembering. There's three aspects here, which is just endurance, like staying with, just staying with over a long period of time, that kind of patience. Jack Kornfield, he has a referred to it as constancy. And there is forbearance, specifically in the face of insult, is another aspect of patience. Boy, is that a hard one, huh? To not, have like, that's not fair, just the anger, the, wanting to lash out, the, blaming back or whatever that comes when you've received an insult. And then the last piece is, I can't think of what the word is that was translated, but just being in reality about what the truth of how our lives are, the truth of suffering. Like the poem is saying, these things are no disaster. They're not. They're just normal. They feel like disaster, but they're just normal. Patient acceptance of the truth of our condition, including what our mind is doing, right? So there's something that happens, we don't like it, it happens. People say mean stuff we don't like or whatever it is, and then being patient with that, not reacting and becoming somebody who's creating more worldly winds for others, but also patience with this is how my mind is right now. This is how my heart feels right now when this happens, when when things happen that aren't fair, they're not right. And that's a lot of that's true. It's not fair. Somebody says something, it's not true about you, like all those things, that's true. But what we do with that to make it sting more for ourselves is what we're practicing to notice how we're doing that. So again, from Ajahn Suchito, who for a while was the head of Chithurst. I'm not really actually in England. I'm not actually really sure where he is right now, but with patience, I'm just quoting him again, with patience, instead of trying to wriggle out of our suffering, one learns to be still and to release the mind from its willfulness and possessiveness. We have the attitude and assumption that things should go our way, that life should be comfortable, that our bodies shouldn't experience pain, and that society should be fair and peaceful. So, yeah, that just sounds very familiar to me. And whenever we feel that sense of being out of balance from being hit by the worldly winds, our mind thrashes around and it like creates a self who is either the victim of the thing that happened or who is to blame. Like this is where we get caught. That's where we live, and practice helps us not live like that. But doing that can deflect the pain in a certain way in the short run, but not in the long run. A lot of times, blaming ourselves, I've just seen this so much as a therapist with myself, that thinking I should have done something else or I could have, whatever, like that it's postponing recognizing my own powerlessness about certain things. I don't want to feel that, you know? So I keep thinking, oh, I could have done, I could have, I should have, if I just twisted myself a little more, whatever, that the things would have gone right, because I don't want to get the more existential reality of the suffering of our lives. So yeah, just trying to catch ourselves in the act of doing that. So when one of these things is happening to us that is strong, whether it's something we like or we don't like, the first thing to do is not to react, and especially the negative ones, like not to rage or despair or to start the mental proliferation, in our minds. I mean, these past several years have given lots of opportunity for having thoughts that it's been around about certain people who have not been kind or good for our country. Just the struggle to not have proliferating thoughts has been more challenging during a lot of the times where people are out saying, bullying and blaming things. So my mind certainly, I had to work a lot more to not just have those thoughts spin, and they can be really true, but there's like a flavor of, I don't know, I'm doing that instead of like looking at the reality that's hard to look at. So when the mind stops all that fidgeting and whining and blaming, then the suffering can be understood. We can stop and really understand it. Yeah, and the reactivity, it feels like the truth, but it's not the truth of the mind. It's a conditioned thing that it's not ourself. It feels like ourself in the moment when I'm being sort of self-righteous about people I'm not naming. it feels so, like that's me. That's me. I think this is right, whatever. But since these things are conditioned, they can be unconditioned. Like we can see the truth, we can see what's harmful and not harmful. Like it's none of this is like we're giving up the field, It's just it's not like we're abandoning what's going on. It's just that we're coming into a deeper sense of these truths, so we can go back out and say something and do something that's going to be helpful, and not just contribute more to our own suffering and other people's suffering. Yeah, this is from Jack Kornfield. I think we are all surfers on the waves of life, the waves of gain and loss, praise and blame, success and failure, of pleasure and pain. The practices of mindfulness and loving awareness offer practical and beautiful ways proven by neuroscience to teach us how to surf the waves of life. They teach balance and offer ways to get back up on the board when we fall off, to surf beautifully with whatever comes to us as best we can. Yeah. And as a therapist, I've been thinking how, there's traumatic stress and there's post-traumatic stress. And traumatic stress, is yeah, when something hard happens, it jumbles up our nervous system. And that happens, that's not infrequent that that happens, that we have some sort of traumatic stress in life. But how we hold it or how we are supported around it makes the difference. Like there's a period before, 6 months, but it's just kind of random, arbitrary, but somebody has to be still suffering a lot 6 months later to get the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress. So, yeah, just that difference between, whether we, what we do in the time we have when traumatic stress happens and after, like really determines whether, like, once you're in post-traumatic stress territory, like that level of trauma, the experience that I've had from, for myself and seeing with other people, it's like that, when that little gap where you can have some mindfulness isn't there, or it is so tiny that it's really hard to stop, like you're taken over by reactivity before you even have a moment. Like this is what trauma that's gone on to post-traumatic stress can do. So we're reacting to the present as if we're back in something that happened before. So yeah, and that also can be undone, that can be healed. Yeah. Yeah, and the whole way that the positive things, like just something as simple as something tastes good, and then I want to go get another bowl of it, even though my stomach's already full, or whatever. The gain of something like that, just in the smallest ways, or we've also been treated to a whole lot of. Ay, 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 people's addiction to fame. Like you get a little of something, and then, oh, really like that. And when that wears off, oh, where's the next one? Just how that can drive people, and can turn. Can turn people that seem like they were really good-hearted, like they get a little fame, a little, certain kinds of power, and it can be so warping. The person who caught my attention about that recently was Sam Bankman-Fried, the CEO of was it FTX? That guy is like 30 years old. I think he's 30 years old, maybe a little older than that. Maybe mid-30s. The guy's a vegan. He worked for something called the Center for. I knew I was going to forget it. I wrote it down somewhere. The Center for Effective Altruism, and set out to make money. To have a career where he had big bunches of money to give away to good causes. Including like having given phenomenal amounts of money to the Democratic Party and intending to give phenomenal amounts more, but also giving money to the other side, hedging his bets for whatever he wanted to get done. Anyway, he just seems like the perfect example of somebody who just that gaining and having notoriety, having money, having power, warped him. Like he seemed to be seems to be somebody who started out with really good intentions. So anyway, yeah, the more I look at this, the more I just see it everywhere. And any kind of addiction likely starts from that core of like, I got a little bit of this thing and oh, it went away. We don't want to know that the good things go away, so we keep going for the thing. So yeah, anyway, that sense of oh, I'm just gonna take it from the Buddha to finish this up, rather than me naming it. At the end of this translation of the sutta, there's something that's written in verse, and it's not everything else is in quotation marks, and this isn't, but the Buddha wrote tons of stuff in verse, so I assume that this was a verse from him. Wait, not he spoke things. He didn't write them. He spoke things in verse. So this is at the end of the sutta about the eight worldly winds. Gain, loss, status, disgrace, censure, praise, pleasure, pain. These conditions among human beings are inconstant, impermanent, subject to change. Knowing this, the wise person, mindful, ponders these changing conditions. Desirable things don't charm the mind. Undesirable ones bring no resistance. His welcoming and rebelling are scattered, gone to their end, do not exist. Knowing the dustless, sorrowless state, he discerns rightly, has gone beyond becoming to the further shore. So that just summing it up in those words of welcoming and rebelling, like that's what the untrained mind does. Just whenever something's good, it welcomes it. Whenever it's not good, it rebels against it. So that's the practice in so many ways. We're just watching for how our minds do that without, trying not to be hard on ourselves about the fact that our minds do that. So, stop there and open it up to see what you all have been thinking while I've been saying all of this. Anything sound familiar? Confusing? Questions, comments? If you like, you can use the raise hand feature. We're not such a big group. You could just unmute and say hello.
I couldn't find the raised hand.
Okay, I thought maybe I saw you fishing for that. Hi.
I
Adrian, hi.
yeah, I experience when I'm experiencing gratitude, I often then go into superiority. I am grateful for this small thing, and am I not clever for being grateful for this small thing? And it's so easy to move from, so that what you were saying really speaks to me.
Wow, thank you for that one. I'm going to watch for that. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Isn't it? It's just great to be around, in community where you can talk about the things you're not proud of, but there's no problem to say them. people are not going to blame you for telling the truth about what you're working with. Yeah. It's part of being in Sangha that we don't maybe do the, try not to do these things to each other quite a tr trigger these quite as much in each other. I had gone through a whole process of listing a whole bunch of things, like what is pleasant in this life and what is painful, and just getting wrapping my mind around what are these categories. Just wondering if anything was coming up for people, what they recognize in their own lives. Linda, or maybe Linda Ray. you need to unmute there. We can't hear you.
I just wanted to clarify when you were talking about, you know, if things were more equitable in the world, if we had peace, etc., and kind of almost like, well, that's, you're not being realistic because that's not how our world is. And I guess I'm just trying to position how it would be not to get caught up in these wins, but still do social justice work and not be patting yourself on the back, but just kind of persevering and trying your best to show up and try to make it better for the next generation, the people around us, the world, that kind of thing. So I just get stuck sometimes, reality versus what you would like, and not, you know, how to look at that.
We just don't know, right? I mean, it's, thank you for that. We don't know where this is all gonna head, you know, whether things could actually get fixed and be better and stay that way. But yeah, the idea of karma yoga is what you're feels like you're pointing to, the practice of do your work, you know, do your best work for the things that you feel are needing your good effort. Do your work and then let go of the results, which is, can be a really tall order. But yeah, the longer I'm on this planet, the more I realize, wow, you know, one lifetime is really not long enough to see all the changes we wanted to see happen. It felt like it was gonna be in like 1968 when I was 13 years old. I thought, you know, that's really where we were heading. And those huge winds of what's happening to people and to our planet are certainly a huge part of what we're coping with in our hearts, and making any positive move, you know, offering anything good anywhere is good. And how you keep your how you keep your energy and your generosity and your willingness and all of that. How do you keep that? How do you keep the energy to continue to offer your work in the social justice realm? That you can run into all kinds of difficult things on the way. There was something where Ajahn Suchito was talking about, you know, just, he had a great list. I don't think I wrote it out, but of all the annoying things that can happen, and how, as you take this practice on more, like, you really start to get that anyone that touches you in a difficult way, that you go, oh, okay, this is my teacher, thank you. You know, like, this is helping me look at where I need work. So that is happening. Even if you know, you do effort in the social justice realm, and you won't even know your results, right? I mean, you may have good results you never hear about. Like, a lot of that work is like that. It can go out there, and there can be people who really benefited. But the work that we're doing inside of ourselves while we're doing that work, and doing it in a way that we're trying our best, not to make more trouble while we're trying to solve trouble. I've done all the wrong things as an activist. I've been like the self-righteous jerk as an activist when I was younger. And, I mean, I've done things that I was fighting for the right thing, but I don't know. I mean, maybe some good happened from it. It probably did, but yeah, just the work inside of myself wasn't happening when I was doing that. So it's no small thing to do that challenging kind of work, and to do this practice while you're doing it and transforming yourself is no small thing in the world, because everything you touch is impacted by the changes that happen in us as we practice. We're rippling all the time. We can't help it. Ripples are going out from us all the time. Well, oh yes, we're at the end of our time. That snuck up on me. Well, good to be with you, and thank you for piping up about those important things, generosity and service through social justice work. We will come to the end of our time here, just sharing the goodness of our practice. So, any blessings, any goodness, anything that you feel for yourself personally, any sense of our connection here together in the group, just any goodness that's been generated by spending part of our Sunday evening meditating and talking about the Dharma. May all of that ripple into each of our lives in a way that is helpful to us, helpful to the other lives we touch. And wishing for all beings everywhere to be freed from suffering. As the worldly winds come, may they suffer no more than any pain that comes. May they not add any extra suffering to it. May all beings be safe. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be free.
Thank you, Kitty.
Thank you, Kitty.
Welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.